Let's continue with more presentations from the VidPi Visually Impaired Data Processors International Seminar, held in conjunction with the American Council of the Blind's Convention in Des Moines, Iowa.
Anyway, I'm Clarence Wiley from GW Micro. GW Micro is located in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I work out of my home in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm the only one of our staff that doesn't have an accent. So GW Micro is located in aisle C in booth 39. We are currently showing WindowEyes 4.1, which now offers lots of good things that we'll briefly go over in a second. We are also showing our beta of WindowEyes Professional, which is for Windows 2000. And I have both on my machine, so you're welcome to come take a look at either Windows, the standard edition, or the professional version. As I say, we're now shipping version 4.1 of WindowEyes, which offers absolutely, we think, the most configurable, powerful, and easy-to-use Braille support in the industry. And now with grade 2 Braille support, we went out and talked with all the really heavy-duty Braille users that we could find and got their input and created a Braille interface that we think is second to none. And we support some 23 different Braille displays, and we also support 39 different speech synthesizers. The nice thing about WindowEyes is that you don't have to do any fancy tricks to install the Braille display. I've had 3 Braille displays sitting there and changed Braille displays in about 5 seconds each, just long enough to change the cable. So it's very easy to change Braille displays, especially if you're in a teaching environment or need to show different Braille displays. WindowEyes is very, very easy to use. No set files are necessary. You can use most applications right out of the box, but yet we have the power to make the program even more friendly and more easy to use. And we are about ready to release WindowEyes version 4.11, which will be a free upgrade for our existing WindowEyes 4.1 users. This will offer some more Braille enhancements, plus support for the new Office XP product from Microsoft. And that will be in public beta probably next week. And as I say, it will be a free download for current version owners of WindowEyes. We have lots of demos in our booth. Come by and pick up a demo if you don't have WindowEyes, and come by and let us show you how really easy it is to use. And we're also having a drawing. Pass the word. We're giving away a copy of the Listening to Word tutorial from Texo that will be given away on Wednesday. So come by and put your name in the hat, and you might just be the lucky winner. One of the most exciting things going on at GW Micro is the ability to read those formerly pretty unusable PDF documents that Adobe brought to our attention. A couple of years ago, Adobe came to us and said, we realize that we need to be more accessible for people who are blind. So we started working with them and were the first, really, to introduce a version of a screen reader software that worked with PDF documents. And now, fortunately for all of us, other screen readers are doing the same thing. But we give you the ability to read a PDF document just as though you were reading or viewing a web page. Filling out complicated forms, and all of this. It's been a long battle, and it's a long battle ahead, because until we educate all of the developers of PDF documents that they need to think about accessibility, all documents won't be accessible. But we've come a long way. Stop by the booth, and we'll show you how easily you can look at PDF documents. And So stop by in booth 39 on aisle C. We're between the ALVA group people and disability specialties. So drop by and register for the drawing and take a look at WindowEyes. Any questions? Pricing on professional is going to be $9.95. Current WindowEyes users, if they purchase within 60 days of when we release it, can upgrade for $400. One of the things we're doing with WindowEyes Professional is that if you buy WindowEyes Professional, it is a totally different version from regular WindowEyes. And we will auto-sense when you install, whether you're running Windows 98, Millennium, 2000, or whatever, and we'll install the correct version. But the actual WindowEyes Professional will ship with both products. Other questions? Okay. Thanks for the opportunity, and I hope you'll all come back tomorrow afternoon, and we'll go more in-depth to all of this.
Hi, my name is Dave Wilkinson. I am going to talk to you about some of the hardware side of Freedom Scientific, a lot of what used to be Blazy Engineering. We have a number of things that we're doing here for this year. For starters, we are doing repairs and updates for your Braille and Speak, Type and Speaks, and Braille lights while you're here. The update includes a number of features, including a vastly enhanced clipboard that will only take item once you've been cutting, copying information to your clipboard. It's totally safe until you move it to another file, unlike in the past where we used the clipboard for some other internal devices, other internal uses. We've now given the clipboard totally back to you. We've also implemented a feature in the update that will allow you to check for appointments within the hour, so that not only will your datebook tell you if you have something happening that day, but there is a hotkey command that will allow you to find out if you have any appointments within the next hour to make sure that you get where you're going on time. In the speech parameters menu, we have added an Echo Words feature so that you don't have to turn interactive on and off in order to get echoing of words. You can simply have key echo words, just like in JAWS and your other screen readers, so that your note taker will simply echo back the words to you as you're typing if you have the speech turned on. And finally, our other major bit on our update is that the stopwatch can be told to audibly announce time at different increments. So in other words, if you're wanting to find out after every 30 seconds has passed or every 43 seconds has passed, you can do that using your update. On the Braille Light 40, you can also now use your .7 and .8 keys as an enter and as a backspace key. The update also comes with several new games, including chess, blackjack, tic-tac-toe, guess that number, and a game called Zap'em for the Braille Light 40. The updates are available at the booth. We'll install it for you, or we'll let you do it. We are at booths 13 through 17. And now I would like to talk about our latest series of note takers called the Millennium Note Takers. We have the Millennium 20-cell note taker and the Millennium 40-cell note takers. The price on the Millennium 20 is $3,495. The 40-cell note taker is $5,595. We do have a trade-in policy so that if you have an older Braille Light 2000 or a Braille Light 40, we will give you $1,500 off towards a new note taker. And if you have a Braille and Speak 2000 or a Type and Speak 2000, it's $600. And we do have buyback policies for the Braille and Speak 640 and earlier Type and Speaks as well. With all purchases of Braille Light Millennium Series note takers and the Type Light, you get a copy of Connect Out Loud, which is a screen access program that will allow you to access the internet, your email, and do basic word processing functions on your computer. And it does support Braille displays, so you wouldn't have to have a screen reader, and you'd be up and working with your computer in no time. The Millennium 20 is the smallest refreshable Braille display note taker with a refreshable Braille display on the market today. It is actually smaller than our BrailleLite 2000 and our BrailleLite 18, and it has two additional cells. On each end of the Braille display, there are what we call whiz wheels. These are programmable so that you can scan through a document by line, sentence, or paragraph. These are especially handy for quick scanning of a document, or if you're trying to scroll down an entire column of information, you can set the whiz wheels to scan by line and just view an entire column of information, so it adds multidimensionality to your Braille display and makes it act much more like a piece of Braille paper. We have a 56K modem that will work with a POP3 email server, so that as long as your email has dial-up access, you can get your email on your Millennium. You can write, read, forward messages, attach messages, and just have a blast. I use the Millennium email feature on a regular basis. The TypeLite is also now shipping with an external 56K modem so that you can also do your email on your TypeLite. The memory in our new units, you have 2 megs of RAM and 12 megs of flash memory so that you can store over 14,000 pages of text. And if that's not enough for you, we also have a compact flash drive built into the back of the units. Compact flash cards are sold at any major computer store or camera store. They're the same cards that people are using in their digital cameras, and they can store anywhere from 4 megabytes of information up to a gigabyte of information, and they're about the size of a small wheat-thin cracker. So they're very small, they're very durable, they can store lots and lots of information, and they fit right in the back of our new note takers. We've vastly enhanced the speech for speech output on our note takers. We are now using double talk speech. So, you've got a wide variety of different voices that you can choose from. You can use the note taker as an external double talk synthesizer if you want. You also have a switch on the left side of the unit that will take you in and out of what we are now calling Braille display mode. Blazy product users will be familiar with speech box mode, which has now been renamed Braille display mode. And instead of having to issue a bunch of keyboard commands, you can simply flip a switch. That's just a little toggle switch that takes you into and out of your Braille display, so that if you're looking on the internet using your Millennium note taker or your TypeLite as a Braille display, you suddenly want to use it as a note taker, you just flip a switch and you're there. Yes. The screen reader does not think the Braille display is still active. You have, they're two totally independent functions so that you won't lose your place on the screen. If you use your, it has the possibility of doing that. It doesn't necessarily slow it down, but it certainly has the possibility of, if you're then writing using your screen reader without the Braille display turned on, you could get different reactions from it, yes. Last product that I would like to touch on briefly is our latest Braille embosser called the Blazer Inferno, hot Braille at a cool price. It's slightly larger than the Braille Blazer, but it's still extremely portable at only 17.5 pounds. It can take any size Braille paper up to 11 by 11.5 Braille paper, and it will Braille at 60 characters per second. So it is 4 times faster than the Braille Blazer, takes wider paper, and is about the same size. We still have speech in the menus, so you don't have to Braille out all of your menus to see how your printer is set. And we have it on display at the booth. And again, we are at booth... I'm sorry? The Blazer Inferno is $2,795. We do have show specials, so that any prices I've given you today, we will take 5% off of all hardware during the show. That includes things like disk drives. So that would reduce your cost of your Blazer Inferno. And we're ready to take your checks, cash, credit cards, money order, or firstborn at our booth. And again, we're at booths 13 through 17. Are there any other questions about the Millennium Series note takers, the TypeLite, or the Inferno? We also do have a Vera on display at the booth, which is a standalone reading system that used to be produced by Arkenstone, that's in a beautiful wooden cabinet. It is only single-sided embossing. You lose the ability to have a portable printer at an affordable price if you go with interpoint embossing. So it's single-sided embossing. Any other questions I can help you out with? Well, we will stretch all of this out into a longer, more thorough presentation tomorrow. For one of the VidPi folks, I have something for your auction. So I don't know who I'd talk to about that. But thank you all very much. We are giving a Texo tutorial called Listening to the Internet for the VidPi auction. And so whoever I need to give that to, I'll be happy to do as well. I do have some Braille handouts of what's available in our update that I'll leave up on the tables here that you're welcome to come and get, or come and visit us in booths 13 through 17. And now we'll have Earl Harrison do the software side of this. Thank you.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Earl Harrison, and I am the Northwest Regional Account Manager for Freedom Scientific in the United States. My territory covers everything from Minnesota north and west of Minnesota, including Hawaii and Alaska. I just transferred into to the sales department in the last, actually back January 16th. And prior to that, I was in the training department and doing workshops and writing curriculum for tutorials that we develop, and also working on the products, working with the development staff, doing things like the installation for JAWS for Windows and Magic and things like that. But I've since moved back to Minneapolis, where it's cold half of the year, and I'm loving it. We're going to talk about a lot of different software products, and of course, in the span of time that we've got today, there's no way I'm going to really be able to do any of them real justice. So I really would encourage all of you to stop by our booth. As Dave mentioned, they're actually booths 13 through 17, and if you go into the door here and take a right, we're on the left-hand side, we're in the first aisle. The first product that I want to talk about, and I'm a little bit nervously, I might add, because we've actually got the product manager, Dusty Voorhees, in the audience keeping tabs on me, is a product called Magic 8.0. And what we've done with Magic 8.0, and I think what you're going to see with all the products now that Arkenstone, Blazy Engineering, and Henry Joyce have been brought under one roof, is the synergy between various products. Magic combines elements of screen magnification and low vision speech. It uses the Eloquence speech synthesizer and has a very, for low vision folks, very easy to see user interface, very easy to use as well. What we did with Magic is formed several focus groups throughout the United States, and we let them call the shots. We got their feedback and asked them what are the types of things that they wanted to see quick access to, and in both the user interface and the keystrokes, and as far as keystrokes were concerned, and we took those comments to heart and came out with what we feel to be an outstanding product in Magic 8.0. Not only do we have the low vision speech, but we've got the ability to not have to leave the native document or native application in order to carry out a say all. I guess we would call this say out in, say all in JAWS for Windows. And you'll notice a lot of JAWS inspired functionality in Magic. For example, on the internet, as you're browsing a web page, in JAWS for Windows, you've got the option of doing an insert plus F7. That brings up a list of links at which you can navigate. And once you find the link you want to go to, you press enter and you're there. Well, in Magic, we've got something called the Magic Key, and while in Internet Explorer, if you press the Magic Key in combination with, guess what, F7, that will also bring up that same list of links. We also borrowed a feature from the previous version of JAWS that allows the low vision person to eliminate a lot of the visual clutter while on the internet. What I mean by that is pictures and things like that. We allow them the ability to reformat that web page so that they can simply concentrate on the text and not have to worry about anything else. The old JAWS keystroke for that, actually I think that still applies if you don't have the virtual PC cursor mode on, was insert plus the function key F5. And with magic, you could probably guess that's insert plus, or rather magic key plus F5. So that's magic. Another application that we just came out in the last 6 months is a program called Connect Out Loud. Dave touched on it a little bit. It ships free of charge with our note takers, the Millennium series of note takers. And it's a fabulous tool for people who don't necessarily want to use the computer that much, but they want to do some stuff. They want to do things such as browse the internet using Internet Explorer version 5 and above, use Outlook Express to send email messages, send and manage email messages. And it's got the basic word processing program called FS Editor that includes a spell check program. The thing that I love about the products that we're talking about, the key word that you're going to come away with here with my presentation is the word synergy. The synergy that's built in between all the hardware and the software that we have to offer at Freedom Scientific is only going to get better. I love the ability to take my Braille Light Millennium note taker and browse the internet using the keyboard on the note taker itself and never have to take my hands off of it. If I want to pull up a list of links, I can do that from the note taker. If I want to activate the link, I can do that. And if I simply just want to read a web page, I can do that as well from the note taker and always be very close to my Braille display to do that. Now, the next product I want to talk about is JAWS for Windows version 4.0. And for those of you who are already JAWS users, some of what I'm going to say you're probably going to really appreciate. For example, in JAWS 3.7, you've got the ability to, during a say all, press the right shift key and skip ahead a line, sentence, or paragraph at a time. We've in 3.7, you've also got the ability to press the left shift key and it repeats the current unit that you're in right now. Well, we've changed that left shift key, so it now functions as a rewind key, so to speak, and it'll bring you back a unit at a time, line, sentence, or paragraph. And it is the only screen reader in the industry that it has that capability right now. Of course, because we do have the synergy being built in between all the product lines, the Braille support for JAWS for Windows is already outstanding, but with 4.0, it's only gotten better. It's gotten much better. As a matter of fact, you can do a single keystroke to bring up a dialog specifically for bringing for Braille displays, control insert plus letter B, and you can go into the advanced options right then and there and select a new Braille display. If you happen to get a new Braille display, JAWS will install it and you'll be up and running with that Braille display. We've also built into it the ability to, as you're in the verbosity dialog, to as you arrow down, JAWS will automatically speak the state of the items in the verbosity dialog. That's really nice. And another thing is the context-sensitive help, which when we press insert plus F1, it just speaks the context-sensitive help. That is help based on where you happen to be in the application at the time. While with version 4.0, that information comes up into a window instead of just speaking in it. And you can navigate that window with your Braille display or using speech, and it works very well. And to get rid of that dialogue, you simply press the escape key and you move on. Nice thing about the JAWS 4.0 is it also supports HTML help. So navigating a HTML help file is as easy as navigating the internet. In some cases, you're going to actually be able to click on a link and it will activate a particular keystroke, a certain function. A couple features that we're building in. I've got the beginnings of a feature called the Frame Viewer. And the Frame Viewer is kind of like the old Frame Manager used to be, but what we wanted to do is come up with something between what the novice computer user was able to use and what your more expert users are using. The Frame Viewer is kind of offers everything, offers a lot for that whole spectrum of users, everything in between, because it essentially functions as kind of a wizard. As you're going through the dialogue, you're being prompted along about the information that appears in that screen or that you want to appear in that frame. We've also got something that's being built in called the Prompt Manager that will allow you to customize prompts that you want folks to hear when you're working on a proprietary application. And of course, we also have support for Adobe PDF files as well. Okay. Any questions on any of these products? 4.0 is at the booth. If you stop by our booth, you can get a demonstration of it, but is currently just in a pre-alpha stage right now. I take that back. I think it just went to private beta on Friday.
Yeah.
So you can see it here, and if you're on our private beta team, you can download it, but we're probably looking at fourth quarter before release. I'm sorry, the question was again?
The off-screen model, has that received any attention as far as accuracy or speed of recognition or any of that?
The question is, has the accuracy of the off-screen model become more, or has it been improved? Has the off-screen model become more improved? And I guess, you know, I'm not a developer, and I really don't have the answer for you there. I know that it's going to depend on the application that you're in, and I guess without knowing the specifics of what types of improvements you're looking for, I can't answer that question. Oh, see, I knew you'd bail me out there. So the answer is yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but this is a fairly abbreviated session. You can come tomorrow and ask for all the details of the those in-depth questions.
What time is that session tomorrow?
It starts at 1 o'clock. Freedom Scientific starts at 1, going to about 2. And GW Micro, 2 to 2:30. And 2:30, I believe, is... AFB's I have to look at my schedule again, but you're looking for Freedom Scientific, but the whole thing starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
You know, if
here we hope, unless they decide they want to move us, but so far as we can tell, it is here.
I might add, too, before I go, is that we are offering a software special of 10% off of as a conference discount. So if you're interested in
Texo, 25%
off of Texo tutorials as well. Thanks, Dave. The most widely used OCR package on the market among blind people. OpenBook is a very powerful scan and read software program that offers a lot in terms of functionality for both low vision and blind people. Here's that word again, synergy. A lot of the functionality that's built into OpenBook is also built into a program called WIN, and some of the features such as this, the ability to add spacing between words was inspired by the learning disability program called WIN, which is also a scan and read program, except it's for learning disabled people. What can I say about OpenBook? We've got the ability to go in. You know, once you scan a document, you have the ability to go in, clean it up. You can edit it. You can view the document in the form that it was scanned in. So you have this is wonderful for transcriptionists because they are able to actually go into the the view that allows them, exact view is what it's called, that allows them to look at the page and compare it to the document that they've actually got, they've actually scanned, and quickly find the errors and correct those on the spot. It's a powerful transcriptionist tool. As soon as you install OpenBook on your computer, it goes out and looks for conversion filters that, and then it adds items into the tools menus. So if it goes out when you're installing, at the time of installation, it will see that you've got Duxbury, for example, on your computer, and it'll put an option in the tools menu that will allow you to, after scanning a document, go in and do an Alt-T for tools, and then in my case, on my computer, it's the number 3. I press the number 3, it pulls it up into Duxbury, in my case, and then I can quickly press a Control-T to translate and a Control-E to emboss. It's beautiful. OpenBook also has the ability to has an email client all its own. So after you set it up, you can actually manage your email very much the same way you could in most of your other email clients. And it's very intuitive and easy to use. The nice thing about OpenBook also is the fact that if you're using a program like JAWS for Windows along with it, and you've scanned a document, as soon as JAWS for Windows sees that OpenBook has come into the foreground, the speech goes asleep, but the Braille stays alive. So you can actually, as you're reading the document, you can choose to use the speech that comes with OpenBook, or you can just use the Braille display, one of the note takers, for example. And what am I leaving out, Dusty? He's the OpenBook product manager too. So, the different scanning engines. We've got 3 of them now. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dusty. We've got the CARE scanning engine, Recognito, and FineReader. So what happens is when you scan a document, it's at any time using three of those scanning engines. Actually, it's using 2 of those 3, and then you've actually got the option to scan within the menus. In layman terms, it's put, you can scan for accuracy or you can scan for speed. So if you're scanning a document that has very high quality text, you can scan for speed and get very good results. But if you've got something, a fax, for example, and the quality is iffy, you definitely want to scan for accuracy, which is the default. Yeah, that's about it for OpenBook. Any questions? Yeah.
What version of OpenBook is that you're talking about with the 3 scanning engines?
Version 5.01 is the latest version of OpenBook.
We have 5.0. What has to be done to get an upgrade?
It's a free download for you. So anybody with version 5.0 can go to our website and download 5.01 for free. And you can get the program on CD, but there is a cost associated with that, as well as the shipping expense. So I'd encourage you to download the program. Other questions?
How big is that download?
Dusty? Do you know? How much?
Well, I got high speed access, so I can do it.
That's right. You might want to download it before you go to sleep. Okay, so if you didn't hear, the abbreviated version that will convert 5.0 to 5.01, so add all the functionality of 5.01, is only about 4 meg. Well, thank you.
Okay. The floor is yours, Jay.
Thanks, Rob, and it's Leventhal for anyone who's not using a synthesizer.
Leventhal.
That's all right. Just to set the record straight, there are certainly people who have more trouble than I do with synthesizers. So I'm talking about Access World technology for people with visual impairments. Magazine put out by American Foundation for the Blind, which started in January 2000. And I became editor-in-chief in January when Paul Schrader became our vice president of governmental relations. We start with our product evaluations, which have been at the ACB convention and published in Journal of Visual Impairment for all these years since the late 80s. And it's screen readers, screen magnifiers, CCTVs, OCR products, general market products. Last July we did an issue on Microsoft, reviewing their office suite and program tools. Our last issue in May was a digital talking book issue with three articles on that subject, an overview, a review of the players, and an interview with George Kircher. And so that covers a lot of the different articles that we do. Overviews, introducing people to the topic and bringing people up to date on what's going on. In the July issue, which will be out any day, at least in the online version, Deborah Kendrick is doing an article on talking ATMs, all the history and what's on the market there. And there will also be an article by Lynn Zelvin, who just joined our staff, on computer training, how to prepare for computer training, how to choose a trainer, and what to do before the trainer arrives and when the trainer's there, and how not to waste your time on technical support and to get the training that you and that your employer want you to have. And then we're also doing in July evaluations of IBM Homepage Reader and Kinect Out Loud. And in September, we'll be reviewing WindowEyes and JAWS, and also having an article on desk lighting and task lighting, several different lamps by a low vision specialist, reviews several different products and says what you should use when. And we definitely don't forget people who are visually impaired. We have the staff and the resources to cover products that are useful for them, as well as speech and braille. So Access World is published every other month, six times a year, in braille, on cassette, on ASCII disc. There's an online version with passwords, which is on our website, and which will be the best version to subscribe to in the near future as we start building in extra content, such as real audio from conventions and parts of interviews that don't make it into the print and braille versions, which are limited by space. And I'm leaving out one format. What could it be? Oh, print. That's right, print, yes. For people who are still stuck on that. And we're also hoping to get on our website for subscribers web braille is the word to use. I have to think of a generic word because NLS is copywriting that word, trademarking it. Something like that. HTML braille. We'll come up with something. I started in February Access World Extra, which is an email update in the months in which we don't publish the regular magazine. So all our subscribers who have email get this update. And for instance, there was the April issue. So we flew home from the CSUN conference, the big technology conference where everyone puts out new products, new versions. There's lots of news there, web accessibility news, meetings, on the digital talking book issues, and all kinds of other unscheduled events. And we sent that right out to about 400 people in the first week of April. And that's something I wanted to do for 10 years instead of waiting a few months for people to get the news. So Access World is $29.95 for a subscription. We're taking subscriptions at our booth, which is 33. And if you are a subscriber but you're not getting Access World Extra, please come by and let us know that. We'll put you on that list. And I'm doing a longer session tomorrow, but let's see. Oh, there we discovered an online Visual Basic tutorial. If there are any programmers in the audience. And I can give you the address for that at our booth. It's long and involved, and didn't even bring it here today. But I don't know of anything else like this. And that's the kind of news that we publish in Access World. New products, news about web accessibility, a lot on the 508, which is the government, making the government, the websites accessible, everything after that date that the government buys and that is used by consumers has to be accessible. So we'll be having an article on that probably in November, just because of the lead time, but it'll be in Access World Extra in August. So I could go on all day about this, but if there are any questions, I'll answer those. Yeah. Why not what?
HTML. Hyper-rail.
That's possible, but it's not the language. It's the grade 2 files that we are putting on in HTML. So we just need some other... Yeah. If you get a password from your regional library, you can go online and download lots of different magazines. I brought a bunch of them here in the Braille Note instead of having to carry the magazines, the New York Times, National, the large type weekly that they put out, and the Berkeley, California newsletter, health newsletter, and PC World, which comes so late. Anyone who gets it, you can get it.
Thanks to all of you for listening in. This is Mike May from Sendero Group. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the GPS and talking map products that we have currently on the market and some of our developments that are underway. And then I'll take just a couple minutes to mention Beyond Sight, who is our national distributor for these products, and they sell a variety of other things that you might want to be aware of, or come by their booth and check them out. Sendero Group is a group of mostly blind folks that shared my passion to take advantage of GPS, global positioning system, navigation, and location information so that blind people didn't have to be 100% dependent on sighted folks to know what was around them. This is the way that most of us have gotten around, and it's worked all right when there was no other option. But there is another option now. You don't have to just have a sighted narrator to tell you what's nearby. Most people probably don't even think in terms of being able to know every restaurant, business, street name as you're driving along in a car, or bus, taxi, or walking. And being able to know what that information is not a concept any of us have really gotten our arms around, because there hasn't been a way of doing this other than the talking narrator, sighted narrator. And as you know, most sighted people get pretty tired of telling you, well, what's this, what am I near, what am I on. I think probably the only thing they hate worse is reading all the CDs in the CD store. Now we have things like CD Connection and CD Now, so you can access all that information independently. It's the same sort of thing with location information. The interesting thing is that the technology is certainly still developing, but the issue right now is more a matter of awareness and appreciation and education than it is technology. Most people don't quite get the idea that this is really good stuff. I mean, is it useful? I mean, do I care about what's between here and there? I just want to get there. When you come to a place like this convention or any town that you're not completely familiar with, it's great because you can, on the talking map, running on your desktop computer, you can have the software. You type in the name of the hotel or the address, and you are now at that location on your map. You can then look at a point of interest database and look at the proximity of various restaurants. So that's what I did for this location, and I went through and found all those different restaurants around here. The Court Avenue Brewing Company at 309 Court Avenue, and its phone number came up, and I called over there, made a reservation, and then I knew exactly how to get there, how long the blocks were, how many blocks, what direction. I didn't even have to bring anything with me. I just did that on my computer in my hotel room. That's a pretty typical way that you could use this kind of software. That's the Atlas software. That's the talking map part of this program. And that's been available for a number of years, initially from Arkin Stone, and then Sendero Group took this project over a little over a year ago. And we've continued to enhance the software. Probably the main thing we've brought forward in terms of the talking map are these point of interest databases. And it turns out that for most people, knowing what these businesses are and what's around is as important, if not more important, than knowing what the street name is. You just want to know what's there. You don't necessarily care that it's on Walnut Street or 4th Street. You just want to know that what your options are so you can pick and choose just like a sighted person can. Now, the other part of the equation is the GPS, Global Positioning System. And we came out with the first version of this a little over a year ago, and the product has continued to evolve. What that does for you versus the map is that you now, instead of putting in your position by typing in an address, your position is identified by the GPS receiver sending a signal to your computer from the satellites, identifying your exact latitude, longitude. So it puts you on the map. Rather than typing in the address, the GPS now identifies your position wherever you happen to be, in a car, as long as it's outside. So once you're on that map with the GPS location, you can do the same thing with the software. Look at what restaurants are near you, what museums, gas stations, exits. We started developing a point of interest file for talking ATMs. Now, there aren't that many around, but there's probably a few in your area, and it'd be useful to know exactly where they are and how far it is. Is it walkable? Do you need to drive? And the GPS or Atlas system will allow you to figure these sorts of things out. The current GPS product, version 1.85, is computer-based. It really depends on the size of your notebook computer, how much weight you're going to be carrying around. Typically, with a small 2 to 3 pound computer, you're ending up with about 5 pounds. And that can be, we make a special pack called an e-pack, which is very cool. You should come by the booth and check it out. It's specifically meant to carry a computer or a note taker, tape recorder, all the various gizmos that blind people have. I've been taken out by a few people whose backpacks around here are so full that they should be pulling a cart behind them and not wearing it on their back. The nice thing about the e-pack is that it's about 2 inches thick, and it zips into these different compartments and so forth. But the idea is that it's low profile, so the weight is distributed against your back, and you can carry your various devices in there, and you can, of course, have the GPS running and a keypad on your belt or on the shoulder strap. If you have a small enough computer, you can just carry it like a camera bag or a small computer over your shoulder. and just take half of the e-pack with you, not the whole pack, so it zips apart. So that's the size of the unit. It's still dependent on a computer. If you're considering buying a laptop computer, this is a reason to get one. I don't think anybody would go out and buy a laptop just to have this. But you really think of it as just another application, like having email or word processing or scanning on your computer. Well, now you have location information. You have navigation. It's just another application. Sorry? Nothing heavy duty in terms of computer requirements. The data, total United States, is in 2 gigabytes. So if you wanted to have the whole thing loaded, these days that's not much. It used to be an issue. It comes on 4 CDs, the map data does. So you can leave it on the CD and just bring over to your computer what you want, or you can load the whole thing as I do, just so you always have it and don't. Special pricing? At the show, we have some deals. I'd come by the booth, and basically we're selling both the GPS and the Atlas at about $200 off the normal price for the units that we brought with us to the show. So in the case of Atlas, the whole United States is $99. It's normally $299. We're also running a drawing and pulling somebody's name out of the hat every day and giving away a free single region Atlas, one CD, not the whole U.S. But the price is free, so why not come by and put your name down and get in the drawing.
Is Atlas updated
frequently? The full version is updated about once a year. The point of interest lists update more often, and we encourage people as they develop points of interest in their own area to put them up on our website. And then we just make it free sharing between the different users of their various point of interest lists.
I have a question pertaining to the GPS side.
Yes.
That is, I'm from Jacksonville, Florida, and our bus company is telling us they're having problems with GPSs on the buses because of what they consider tall buildings down in Jacksonville and coming to Chicago. Downtown Chicago, Kansas City, and New York, and LA, those types of places. Are you experiencing any problems with this in those type of tall building areas? I mean, will a person have a problem walking down the streets of Chicago? And will they be able to, GPS, will they be able to?
Good question. The GPS does need to be outside, and there has to be at least 3 satellites being picked up. What that means is when you get into what's referred to as an urban canyon, which means you're surrounded on all 4 sides by buildings that are 15 stories or higher, you're probably not going to pick up any signals. What I find, for example, in downtown San Francisco in the financial district is I'll lose the buildings between as I'm walking down the street, and then as I get to the intersection and it opens up more, then I'll pick up the GPS signal again. I'm surprised on a bus that they're having problems, because when you're in the middle of the street, you have a clearer view of the sky than you do when you're walking along the sidewalk. I've had problems certainly in Manhattan and in sections of Chicago or even in San Francisco where you do lose a signal. But I would say, as I travel all over the country and around the world, I'm able to get a GPS position a good 95% of the time. It does matter what kind of receiver you use, and we continue to test a lot of different receivers to make sure that we have the one that has the best sensitivity.
That's what I was really curious about. We're just doing the cheap product, and you get what you pay for.
It could be. I'm surprised on a bus that they'd have those problems, and Jacksonville doesn't. I don't think it has 30-story buildings, right? Right.
Selling a product last year that at the time that was basically wasn't accurate. You had it moving at a car speed or greater. I just remember refining it all, so I just wanted
to. No, you don't have to be moving at a car speed. What you have to do is move, period, in any direction for something like 50 feet or 100 feet before it figures out which way you're headed. The GPS is sampling, it's sending down signals every second. And so once you're moving in a given direction, then it says, aha, you're going northeast. You could at any point walk out of this building and turn it on and say, where's the Savory Hotel? And it would say, It is southeast, 329 feet. Even before you start moving, that's the case. It might be useful to know where this technology is going, because a lot of things are going to happen in the next year to 2 years that are fairly significant. Certainly, computers are going to continue to get smaller, and so your sub-notebook computer will, instead of being 3 pounds, it'll be a pound and a half. We have that happening. We're not changing that at all. We're just relying on the commercial sector to do that. And that's the good news for you. That's why the price is so inexpensive as it is, because we're using commercial GPS, commercial laptops. But we will be running before too long on some notebook platforms. We're working on this as we speak, and you're not likely to have all the horsepower that you would on a laptop, but certainly not in the first version. But we hope to eventually have the maps and points of interest and everything on a fairly powerful note taker as well. So that's underway. Also, there are GPS cell phone combinations that the manufacturers are starting to come out with. So you'd be able to, instead of carrying your data around with you on a computer, you could get it via a server. It's by picking up your cell phone and hitting a button. It sends your position to a server and identifies what's near you. It wouldn't be the same kind of talking narrator, but it would be useful if you're just stuck and say, well, I need to find out if I'm headed in the right direction or not. So the cell phone platform is something we're going to see more development on, as well as the note taker platform. There's also some developments in terms of indoor navigation, in terms of using dead reckoning. And also there's a technology that piggybacks, that really combines GPS and cell phone so that you could get a location indoors. So we hope that one of those will really emerge as the best system, so you'll have seamless navigation between indoors and outdoors. Any more questions? Booth 55, Beyond Sight in Sendero. So come by and enter that drawing and pick up either a real good deal on the GPS talk or the Atlas talking maps.
Any thought or work towards having a system on a notetaker such as the Barrel Note, which has window seat type application?
Absolutely. Those would be the devices I'm thinking about.
What was his question for the sake of the rest of the paper? Did any of the others, if you want to hear what Mr. Villa was saying? Okay. It just sometimes the question with one answer, it's kind of hard to figure out. What was it?
Yeah.
About having the sulfur run on a unit such as the Rail Mode, which has
Yeah, those platforms are obvious places where we can get into a much more portable device. Yeah.
I've got a question. Where in the world do you ever get your data for these points of interest around the U.S.? Some commercial entity must be assimilating or compiling these databases. Where do you ever do
that? Thank goodness it's not you or me having that job.
I know.
I've visited one facility in Europe where they do this, and they had 900 people sitting there with little digitizers and computers and keying in all of this data to the point of, in their database, starting to put in whether there's sidewalks or not, construction zones, on and on and on. So it's a huge, very expensive operation, but there's a couple companies in the U.S. that are doing that. Then they license the data to companies like ours and all the vehicular companies, the rental car companies who are putting GPS into various devices.
With the advent of licensed products, is there any thought possibly having a license type arrangement that allows you to download updates as they become available?
I would hope that eventually we would be able to update the maps more frequently. Right now, they're so large that even a fast connection doesn't make sense to download 2 gigabytes. That's right. You could get sections of your maps updated. The points of interest files, Yeah.
I'd like to interrupt long enough. Is the IBM representative here at this time?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that has to end the questions. Mike, we really appreciate your... did you have any last remarks before I turn you off?
Let me just mention a word or two about Beyond Sight, since that was the other 10-minute segment I was supposed to give here. And I would just reiterate that this is a superstore in Denver that certainly if you're in the area, you should go in there. The thing that always impressed me when I first met these guys is it's one of the few places a blind guy can go and browse. Things are labeled. There's just everything from watches to low vision stuff, you know, high-end computers across the board. It was really a superstore for blindness and low vision products. They also have a website where you can buy all that stuff online, canes, watches, computers, and certainly all the GPS products. Come by our booth and or check out our website, senderogroup.com or gps-talk.com if you forget the Sendero. And I appreciate your time today.
What's your booth number again?
Booth 55.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Guido Corona. I'm the test and support manager from the IBM Accessibility Center in Austin, Texas. And our group is here at the ACB convention showing the latest creation of our group, which is the IBM Homepage Reader version 3.0. If anybody is not familiar with Homepage Reader is a multilingual, multimodal, talking web browser for the blind and the visually impaired. A lot of you are probably familiar with the prior version, which is version 2.5. And the Homepage Reader 3.0 is a substantial rework of the entire product, which has a brand new user interface and brand new capability. And I can discuss that very briefly. Before I forget, because I do tend to forget things, the price is still $149, but until the end of August, there exists also a $50 phone-in or mail-in rebate, which brings the cost of ownership down to $99. All right. The Homepage Reader is a product which includes web navigation, email, and access to some ancillary applications, which means Notepad, WordPad, RealPlayer, Windows Media Player, and I believe also Winamp, such that if someone does not have a screen reader and is in the middle of doing the web and all of a sudden ends up on one of these little applications, he or she will still be able to function. Let's talk very briefly about some of the concepts in Homepage Reader. As you well know, the net is a very information-rich and structure-rich environment where blind folks have to deal with links, visited links, normal text, forms, controls, headings, search hits, list items, and other things. And the problem that we are all experiencing is that in order for us to know truly what's going on and not to have completely flat text, we have to have a lot of little weasel words inserted in. You know, link, link, link. There are 350 of them on CNN alone. I have run a report, and that's what I got, about between 350 and 360 per page. Then you have the visited links. And what you end up is usually with a screen reader with an environment, while it is accessible, it is very verbose. So what we have done is we have created an environment which is very information rich, where you will know instantly if something is a link, is a visited link, is a heading, is a search hit, is a list item, and so on. But we will not add to the verbosity of a page. We will denote all of this information by largely either voice changes or extra MIDI sound that we interject in the verbalization. So the amount of time that it actually takes to go through a page is much faster, and in a sense is a system which is very similar to what sighted individuals have. Sighted individuals don't read the word visited every time they see a visited link. It's just in a different color. So why should we hear the word visited? Now, if you really want to, you can have the word visited. And in fact, if you really want to, you can have an entire novel telling you that the link has been visited. Because in Homepage Reader, while we give you what we think is an optimum environment, you can change the way we verbalize things, or we denote things, or we display things to your heart's content, both what we call speech attributes and text attributes. Typically, people ask, how fast can it speak? 700 words per minute. I don't know anybody who can speak as fast. Not even Italians can speak that fast. All right. Of course, the system also does magnify, can change fonts, can change the foreground, the style, anything you want. For things such as I said, links, visited links, normal text, headings, list items, few other things, and meta text, which is the unfortunately weasel words that sometimes we need to put in to tell you that something is the beginning of a form or end of a form, and so on. Now, navigation. If you're familiar with screen readers and you're familiar with the internet, you realize that you have to be able to go to previous, current, next, first, last, bunch of them up, bunch of them downs for all the things that I have discussed above, plus lines, character, words, and other things. That makes, I think, for about 70 to 80 to 90 commands, which is, to our view, unlearnable, and probably in the view of most people. So, but things I think are important. You have to be able to do this. So what we thought instead is to going to a base mode system. No, mode-based system, where by default, the simple commands that are assigned to your arrow keys and to the home and end key, page up and page down, move you by items or paragraphs. But with the keystrokes, you can change that to words or characters or links or headings or anything else you need. So like that, the user now needs to learn only a bare few things to get about. It becomes very fast and very effective. Now, whatever is in the keyboard ability of IE is still supported. So to navigate by links, I will use tab and shift tab, but you don't have to do that. And for people who hate mode-based navigation, we support discrete commands through the numeric keypad. We do frames very easily. We followed all the W3C, WAI guidelines for images, even when they do not make sense. And the system is extremely easy to use and has a very, very short ramp up to become productive. Of course, we have JavaScript, and I have heard lately from someone who told me that we apparently have the best JavaScript support in the industry. The system comes with 7 different languages, with automatic switching to the different languages, and with a fairly nice set of documentation. From a getting started page that introduces you to a mere 11 simple commands, to a reference, to a quick reference, and the tutorial developed for us by Texo in Montreal. Any questions?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I cannot answer that.
I couldn't either. Does it work with tables?
Oh, most definitely. I'm sorry, I do apologize profusely. It works very well with tables. It has 2 navigation modes that are used for tables. One of them is table jump, which does the usual up, first, last, next, previous, current for the top of each table on the page, which is interesting because most tables are actually totally useless. The tables that are interesting are the ones that are very wide. And when you jump to a table, the system will actually read you the first row. So when you hear a bunch of words that seemingly have no related meanings, you are probably at the top of an interesting table, at which point you go into table navigation mode, where your arrow keys now do X, Y work on each table cell. And you can also have Homepage Reader reading you automatically the headers of each table, where we use a bunch of heuristics to determine what we need to tell you. So it works very well with tables, even with complex tables and tables having span cell, which means extra wide cells for extra tall cells. Once to put the field in read and write mode, and once again to close it. It's some work that we are still looking at for the future, and we may look at different solutions for the future. Yes. Next. Okay. Okay. There are two questions: one from the left, one from the right. You'll have to be
outside voice.
Somewhat louder.
Can you hear me now?
Barely.
Okay, you can hear me. Try real hard, will you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any way that you try to create a tactile rendition?
Tactile can be done by Homepage Reader having a maintaining a focus point or point of regard, if you want an invisible cursor, visible and invisible actually, because there is a highlight that moves along, which can be exported to a screen reader. So if you have a screen reader and you turn off the speech of a screen reader, but you have a screen reader still active with Braille, that screen reader will be able to track our verbalization and display things on a Braille bar.
Okay, one other question.
Sure.
I don't know. It seems to me one of VidPi people said that he'd tried the IBM screen reader and it had knocked out his JFW. He had to do some things to get the speech to come back on JFW. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do. Actually, it's the Homepage Reader, not the screen reader that works under OS2. In JFW, there are no known conflicts per se, provided you use the JFW non-SAPI based eloquence. All you need to do is to set up JFW to go to sleep. You do that setup once, it's fairly simple, and then you're off to the races. There are some conflicts in two situations. Number one, if you are upgrading from an earlier version of Homepage Reader, either 2.0 or 2.5, or you are an open book user, in which case you have in your system something called IBM Via Voice Out Loud.
That's it.
Okay, great. With Via Voice Out Loud, we have now a module which we can provide called ttsclean.exe, and all you need to do is to run this module. If you have Homepage Reader 3.0 already installed, and then install Homepage Reader once more on top of whatever you have. Don't worry about erasing anything, and the problem will go away. Similar symptom, but different cure, is for those people that are using instead GW Micro with the Eloquence SAPI based. And what happened there is that we were compiling our code with a slightly down-level version of a compiler, which ended up causing crashes on some DLLs when Eloquence was present. And thanks to the friendly folks at GW Micro, we have discovered that and we have recompiled our code on an internal version, and hopefully that fix will become generally available sometimes in the very early fall. So we have a fix available for one problem and a fix ready and soon to be available on the related problem. And that, I believe, fixes all the conflicts that we know of. TTS Clean is not. It will be hopefully soon on the website. The best thing is either to come to my booth, and I will personally cut you a CD if you don't have a diskette where I can put it on, or you can send me email, and I will personally send it to you. And my email is Guidoc, or GUIDOC. At us.ibm.com. I also recommend that people that are interested in a homepage reader subscribe to the discussion group, which is ibm-hpr@talklist.com. And if you have a copy of homepage reader, you can subscribe to it from the help menu, where there is an item for doing that. Or you can send a note with a blank subject line and the words subscribe space IBM-HPR and send a note to requests with an S at talklist singular .com. requests@talklist.com. Any more questions?
Let me ask this. Anyone from Benetech or Betacom here yet?
Benetech's here.
Okay. Well, I think you covered things quite nicely, Guido. I really appreciate your coming. Pleasure having you again this year. Hope you'll be with us next year, too.
Splendid.
And lots of luck.
And please come and see us. And booth 32, we have their homepage reader, and we have also some remaining chocolates. All dark chocolates are gone, but the other ones are still there.
Exactly. So,
if I don't get you with homepage reader, I'll get you with chocolates. And anybody who needs TTS Clean, let me know, and we'll fix it in one way or another. Thank you for listening, and have fun. Bye.
Have at it.
Okay, I'm Jim Fruchterman of Benetech, and I'm here to talk about Bookshare.org. A lot of you may know Benetech under its old name of Arkenstone. We're the nonprofit successor to Arkenstone. Last year, as a lot of you know, the Arkenstone reading machine products were sold to Freedom Scientific, but the engineering team and I stayed with the nonprofit, and we're busy building new projects. Bookshare.org is the first of what we hope to be a sequence of new products for people with vision impairments. So that's where we come from, and I think that I'll tell you a little story about how we came to start Bookshare. A few years back, my son was using the computer, and after he got off the computer, I noticed this little icon on the computer, and it was a very funny little icon, and I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Oh, that's Napster, Dad." And I said, "Napster? What's that?" He says, "Oh, it's just for music." And so I quickly dug in and found that our home computer was serving up illegal music to the internet right then and there. And I said, well, Jimmy, how did you get this? And he said, "Oh, you know the kid on the corner? His mom's the CEO of Napster." And it was true. The head of Napster lived on my block in California. So after digging into this a little bit and taking Napster off, because as a software maker, we have to be kind of, you know, careful about these things, I started chatting with the Napster people and figuring out how can we use the Napster concept to help disabled people. And of course, we wanted to do it in a legal way, but it was actually possible. So the whole concept is that Napster took off because it built a community of people who were able to share materials, and the collection of material that they created reached critical mass. That's exactly what we want to do with Bookshare, but with a few differences. The first one is there's this exception in the copyright law that makes services like the Library of Congress's NLS and Recording for the Blind Dyslexic legal. It says that you don't have to get permission from the copyright holder to make accessible versions of books available to people who are disabled. So we're actually taking advantage of that law in a way that the framers of that law never thought we'd use it, by hybridizing essentially the large community of people who are scanning in books with Arkenstone or Kurzweil or other systems. What we're trying to do is permit those people to reach that critical mass by sharing all the books they're scanning. So the whole idea is that if somebody somewhere has invested the 3 hours to scan in that book, and even better, if someone else has proofread it, wouldn't it be great if you could access that book by just logging into the internet and accessing it? So that's really where Bookshare.org comes from. So I think that, let me kind of walk you through how it works. I think that'll help. So the first thing you do is you go to www.bookshare, one word, .org. And today, if you go there, you find out a lot of information about Bookshare. It's not up yet. I'll tell you about the schedule in a minute. But you can sign up for a newsletter to update you. But you go to bookshare.org, and our goal is to make it like Amazon. Type in, you know, Karamazov, if you want the Brothers Karamazov. And what will happen is that you'll get a list of all the versions of that book that are available. And our goal is not only we get a list of all the books that you can download from Bookshare.org, but you also get a list of all the accessible versions of those books available from other providers of accessible media. So my goal is that if I type that in, I find out NLS has it on audio tape, four-track audio tape. And National Braille Press is selling it for $25 in Braille. And Bookshare.org has a download, and whether or not it's been proofread. So let's make the assumption that that you want it right then and there. So you make a choice. Do you want it in Braille, which would be the BRF digital format, or do you want it in the DAISY NISO format, which would be sort of a text-based format that's kind of like HTML? Now, if the material you want has been copyrighted, so in other words, it's not in the public domain, not you know, 80 years old or whatever, you have to have an account with us. And to get an account with us, you have to prove to us that you have a qualifying disability, and we'll use the same system that RFB&D uses to qualify people, and we'll accept proof of services from RFB&D or NLS as sufficient proof to get access to our service. And you have to pay a subscription fee. And we haven't set what the subscription fee is going to be, but our current guess is going to be something in the ballpark of $50 per year. So you enter in your name, your password, you're allowed to download the material, and a minute later, that book is on your hard drive. It's encrypted to you as an individual. So you want to access it on your hard drive, you do so, and you type in your password, and then you get access to that book, and now you can do a lot of different things with it. You can put it in your Braille note taker. You can print it out in Braille. You can access it in OpenBook or Kurzweil or JFW or WindowEyes or whatever your particular access solution is. Our deal with you is that you get to do all those things without us putting a lot of strings on you, as long as it's for you and not to be recirculated. So the deal is you're not going to put this on a free internet site. And by putting some of those protections in place and having our members agree to that, we've got the industry association, the Publishers Industry Association, to actually support us in doing this rather than fighting us. So just like the record industry is busy fighting Napster, we went to the book equivalent, the AAP, and convinced them that they wanted to work with us. What we did is we said we would take some precautions to protect their material. The publishers were perfectly okay with blind people getting access to these books as long as this didn't become a source of Bookster, free books over the internet to everybody. And of course, we did change the name from Bookster shortly before we got to talk to the publishers. So basically, that's how it works. And the collection, let me tell you some things about the collection. Since it's scanned books, there's going to be a combination of things that are proofread and books that are not proofread. Our goal is that, at a minimum, the quality will be what you would get by scanning it yourself. And over time, we're trying to get the books to where they are proofread and then have structure. We're dealing with Daisy and ISO books that are text only. And this is a key difference. Most of the Daisy and ISO books are focused on audio. Basically, I'm being the next generation of the talking book. And so they have recordings of human voices delivering the book content. Our initial conception is that we're delivering you text, HTML-like text, got some structure in it, and you use a voice synthesizer to access it. So when you're actually using it on your system, you're going to have a talking application like Connect Out Loud or Draws or Window Eyes to be accessing it. The thing that's going to make Bookshare really take off is when the average user comes, visits our site, and more than half the time finds the book they're looking for. So we are absolutely dedicated to reaching that critical mass where people will go to our site, find what they're looking for, and come back. And the other key thing is that we're not deciding what the collection should be. The users decide what's in the collection because the users are creating the books. So everyone who's out there scanning should be saving their books so that they can share it through Bookshare with the entire rest of the community. And because a lot of people are proofreading the books, we have not really even been publicizing Bookshare.org, and we already have 10,000 books, the majority of which are already proofread. Now, I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case long term, but we're definitely getting a lot of books from people who have taken the time to proofread their books. We're really going to be focusing on schools because the schools have the obligation to deliver the books in high-quality proofread format. And so we really want to get the schools signed up because they'll be a source of really high-quality text. But our near-term objective is really to get as many books as possible up there that are at least as good as you would scan yourself and then ratchet up from there in terms of quality and quantity. So I think now would probably be a good... Oh, let me just give you the schedule, and then I'll answer some questions. The website internally is about 85% done. Our internal focus has shifted to getting the collection large and high quality and cataloging all that. We're expecting to be able to accept uploaded books next month at our site at bookshare.org and to take the site live with at least 10,000 books, and we're hoping quite a bit more, at the end of the year. So that's basically the timetable, and I'd be glad to answer some questions if anyone has them.
Jim,
yes?
Is there any possibility in the books directly to the publishers?
The question is, any books in the publishers? The answer, yes. It depends on the publisher. Some publishers are very paranoid, and other publishers are very easygoing. So I'll give you an example. Bain Books, which is a science fiction publisher, has an online book service already. And they've agreed that we can take all the books on their online service and make them available through Bookshare. So they're great. And there are authors and other publishers that are like that. I'd say that a few of the publishers have started saying, could we be meeting our legal obligations to provide accessible books for, say, textbooks through Bookshare? And our answer has been more or less, sure. And so I think that we're not expecting to get a lot of content from publishers, maybe less than 5% at the beginning, but we're hoping that... I mean, my long-term vision is that Bookshare won't be needed because every publisher is going to make their stuff accessible and affordable. I think it's going to take at least 10 years, so we're filling that gap.
Yeah, $50 subscription fee.
Mm-hmm.
Does part of that go to a...
No, the subscription fee goes solely to keep the service running. Our goal is that we're creating the service using the money that we receive from Free and Scientific, to be honest. That's where the money funding is coming from. And our goal is to get the service within 2 or 3 years to be break-even so that the subscription fees pay the costs of keeping the service going. We're not necessarily expecting to recover the money that we invested in creating it, though.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Time for us to log off for another week. On behalf of all the Main Menu team, I'm Jonathan Rosen, wishing you a pleasant week.